Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, as is Becky Kovach, and we're talking all about The Dark Tower, Wizard and Glass. Becky, welcome back for a Dark Tower discussion.
Thank you. It's great to be back. We were just talking about how it's been a minute since my last episode.
Yeah, and I mean, we can kind of blame Stephen King for that because he had a very, very large gap between books 3 and 4 here. And, you know, I think I've probably read at least 10 books in between. And even though that might not seem like a lot, just based on how many years that spans, it's probably roughly 10 years. So there was a very, very long gap for Dark Tower fans at the time between The Wastelands and Wizard and Glass, which is always fascinating to me to see sort of his process behind these books, because when he wrote The Gunslinger, he knew it was going to be multiple books, and then you have this huge gap between 3 and 4, but then 5, 6, and 7 came out back to back to back. So I might die reading those. I don't know. But it's just, I think he had his accident at some point between books 4 and 5. And then he was like, oh crap, I better finish this up. So that'll be interesting to see how those three books read, having been written so closely together in comparison. But what is it about Wizard and Glass that sort of drew you in? It seems like a lot of people really, really love this one, and I might be on the opposite end of that.
Oh, so we have a real discussion on our hands then. When I started the Dark Tower series, I started with The Stand and then moving into The Gunslinger, I found that the first few books didn't quite pull me in. Like, it was one of those things where I was reading it just to finish reading it.
Okay.
Not necessarily because I found myself fully enthralled by what I was reading. And then coming to Wizard and Glass, this is where I finally started to feel like I was getting into the series, and I was starting to feel more of like a draw to what was happening and wanting to find out, like, okay, where are we going next? What's going to happen after this? And Wizard and Glass is like really where I started to truly get into the series.
Yeah, that seems to be a common thing for a lot of people. Personally, I like the first three books better than this one. I wouldn't say I hated this one by any means, but I felt like because I was enjoying so much of the stuff at the end of book 3 with Blaine the Mono, and it picked up where it left off in this one, to have the not necessarily abrupt interruption for the very, very, very long flashback, but it just felt like it took me out of the present day story for far too long. I understand the importance of the flashback and how Susan was Roland's first love and the glass coming into play and him looking into it and then coming back to the present day at the end and they look into it again. But there was just so much of the flashback that I was like, wait, is this just one long story he's telling and nothing's actually happening in the present day right now? And that turns out that was the case. He told the story for almost a full day, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a very long, it was sort of like when he sits down with the Dark Man and they spend an entire night talking. What's weird about the fact that I like this book so much is that so much of it is just set up for what's happening in the present. Like, it's just a bunch of background information on Roland. And what I didn't love about the first few books is that it very much just felt like set up for what's to come.
Yeah.
But I think I enjoyed getting to see this other side of Roland, him as a young man, a little bit more carefree, willing to fall in love and like able to fall in love and not get hardened by the things that have happened and what he's done. So I think I just really liked getting to see what he was like before the world moved on.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think for me, because this journey ended up standing still in this book, I think that was what kind of bummed me out the most, because I was so into the journey that they were going on in The Wastelands. And then that just comes to a halt in this, so he can tell this uber long story with so much detail. And you kind of, in the back of your mind, know that most people would not remember so many details about something that happened seemingly so long ago. Like, if someone asked me about some thing that happened 10 years ago, I would not remotely be able to tell anything in this much detail.
No, but I think that might have something to do with his role as a gunslinger. I feel like just in general, they are very much like observant people and able to hold on to those minute details, just like it's the nature of their job. So I think that that has to do with it. And it is a very, very long, detailed flashback. And I think it was probably too much, but I enjoyed getting that glimpse into his past and how he started and like his life with his friends, which is something that like we don't really see much of from him until he brings Eddie and Susanna and Jake into this world. He's very much a loner up until then.
Right. And I think that's why I like The Wastelands so much, because he finally got Jake, Susanna, and Eddie together, and they were going on this journey together. And really, the flashback is not just about his first love in the glass, but really the friendships that he had and his first quartet. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but really the first group that he got together to go on this search for the Dark Tower. And it really just gives you that perspective of where he's been coming from for all of these years, because that traumatic event defines who he is now.
Yeah, and it very much sets him on the path that they're all currently on. So I think that this particular flashback is important to what's happening in the present day of the books. It just maybe was too much of a story within a story. Like, we literally got an entire novel set within the, like, the construct of a novel, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think that with the amount of detail in Roland's story, we get to know a lot about Susan's family. Her father is obviously gone or dead. I believe it's dead. And Cordelia is the one taking care of her. And Susan just doesn't have this fantastic life. She's meant to go, you know, sleep with the mayor. And she's like, I don't know, 14, 15, maybe, at this point in time.
Yeah, she's very young.
And granted, that was more common back in the day, but still you're kind of like, no, I'm not feeling this. Don't treat Susan this way. And it's just one of those female characters that isn't treated as well by King as some of his other more powerful female characters, like Charlie from Firestarter, or even Carrie has a power that she ends up using. And with Susan, it's just like she gets the short end of the stick the entire time.
Yeah, she has a rough start and it just doesn't ever get better for her. And like, you think maybe it will, and her and Roland will have a chance to like be together, and then that all just comes crashing down around them.
It really does. And it's such a bummer, because after reading so many Stephen King books, for the most part, he treats a lot of the female characters as well as he can, given the time periods that the stories are taking place. And he sort of subverts some expectations when you're reading some of his stuff from the 70s and 80s and things like that. But with this one, you kind of get that false sense of hope with Susan, and you're kind of like, oh man, she's going to do something and it's just going to kind of blow this whole thing up and she's going to be able to get away. And obviously we know, given the present day, she's not with Roland then. So you kind of get this sense, okay, maybe they got away together but went their separate ways later. You don't really know at the start how things are going to play out for Susan, and then they just play out in the worst way possible. She's literally burned alive. And you have Ray, who is sort of this witchy woman who is determined to make everyone miserable, it seems.
Pretty much. She, like, just wants to drag everyone down with her.
Yeah, it's hard to sort of just pinpoint one villain in this, too, because you have the mayor who is sleeping with young girls. You have Ray, who is this, like I said, witchy woman just trying to make everyone miserable. And Cordelia knows that too. And even Cordelia isn't all that great towards Susan. So you really have Susan, Roland, and his friends who are the quote unquote good guys in this flashback story. And you see that Roland has this struggle even with his group of friends too, because he's with Susan. You have this boy, Shimi, who ends up following them around. And you just have so many moving pieces in this flashback that I did find it a little hard to keep track of what everyone's purpose was during it.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of what exactly is happening and who is who, just because there's so many little subplots that are happening within it. So there's Roland's love story with Susan. There's Susan being promised to the mayor as, I think the word was Gilly. Like, essentially, she's supposed to, like, bear him an offspring so that he can have a child or something. And then there's Roland's friends who believe that his judgment is being clouded by his love for Susan. And then there's, like, a whole other subplot of, like, these weapons that they're trying to fuel using oil. And it's just, it all, it's so confusing sometimes.
It really took me a while to get into the flashback and understand what was going on, because the thing is, Roland isn't present for everything he's telling us about. So then it's kind of like, well, you weren't there, so how do you even know this whole section of the story?
Right. And like, it's him telling the story, but it's almost as if he's taken on the role of like an omniscient narrator. So it just kind of like goes back and forth between those two kind of perspectives. And it's very strange. As I'm talking it out, I'm realizing that a lot of this is just unnecessary or does not make any sense. And I'm like, why did I like this so much?
I don't mean to make you question how much you like the book, but for me, it was just one of those things where I was hearing how many people like this because I was sort of posting my reading progress on Instagram and people were like, oh, I love this one. I love this one. And I was reading it more and more and I was just like, why though?
Yeah, I guess as I was reading it, I wasn't really like thinking too closely about all of these things. So now looking back on it and like really breaking it down a little bit, I'm like, oh no, like some of this is kind of weird. Like his choices for these things were a little bit off.
Roland does have that kind of power to just draw you in with his storytelling though. And I think that's really what King was going for in this one, because even at the end, you get Jake, Susanna, and Eddie, and they're kind of like, how much time has passed? Oh, it's only been a day. It actually doesn't feel like we've been up too terribly long. It's basically like they pulled an all-nighter to listen to Roland tell this story, and they weren't really any more tired than they usually are. So you get a sense that they were all engrossed in this story Roland was telling, to the point where they didn't know how much time had passed. They lost track of time while he was doing this. And you do have some moments where you're reading it and you're kind of like, this is a very long story to tell in one sitting. And there's obviously more to the story because they have questions for Roland after the fact. And he's just like, not now kind of thing. And I do wish we would have had more at the end, because I think by the time you get done with the flashback moment, there's only about 60 pages left in the book, or at least in my copy, which was 699 pages.
Oh my God.
So by the time I got to those final 60 pages, I was like, okay, obviously we're not going to get super, super far in their journey with this book. So it kind of felt like things stood in place a little too long. And I was glad it at least picked up where they left off with Blaine the Mono. And you kind of had this bookend for the flashback moment.
Yeah, it gives some kind of continuity. Just a side note, my copy was over 1,000 pages, so clearly we are not working off the same edition, but...
No, I have a really old one. It's like the first mass market from Signet, so it's from probably 97 or 98, which the book came out in 97, so it's one of the earlier copies. And I know as they make new printings of a lot of King's books, the page count seems to get higher. And I'm just like, how does this make any sense? But then you look at some of the older paperbacks that I have, and it's like the font is smaller and the lines are much closer together. So they're squishing in a lot more words per page in comparison to some of the new printings. So I've definitely noticed that. But regardless, it is a very long book. And that's why I think the whole flashback thing stuck out even more to me, because I was like, is this going to end anytime soon? Where is this going?
Yeah. And I'm wondering if, I know we talked a little bit about how there was so much time between the book before it and this one. I'm wondering if that like kind of played into his thought process of having this one book be pretty much just a long flashback, like to ease people back into the story almost.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where I think King realized that they had to give us some backstory on Roland eventually. Mm. And after having this sort of triumphant win over Blaine the Mono, maybe all the characters just needed a break, because that seemed very exhausting to try to come up with all these riddles to stump him. And then you have Eddie just pissing the train off so that the train crashes. So you have this big moment that leads up to the flashback, and it really gives the other three characters a chance to sit down and rest, because as someone who podcasts frequently, I know that talking can actually be very tiring because I've had days where I've done, you know, two recordings in one sitting, and by the end of the 2 hours or so, I'm just wiped out from having a conversation with someone. So I can only imagine how Roland feels telling a nearly 24-hour story.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exhausting for Roland, but you're right, it does give the rest of the characters kind of a chance to catch their breath after nearly being murdered by a psychopath train.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy the whole, like, episode, quote-unquote episode, with Blaine the Mono, where it kind of gave Eddie a chance to shine a little bit.
Yes.
Because there's so much emphasis placed on Roland as the leader, and Roland as, like, the guy that they turn to when they're trying to solve a problem, and he's the one who always figures things out. But in this case, it was Eddie who realized that, like, stupid riddles were the way to go, because they annoyed Blaine to the point where he just kind of, like, short-circuited his own, like, hardware. So I like the fact that it gave Eddie, who is typically viewed as, like, the foolish one of the group, a chance to step up and, like, take charge and actually figure something out.
Because it was a type of thinking that Roland just isn't accustomed to. He's sort of a very straightforward guy who doesn't always understand sarcasm or make jokes. And he does make a joke in this, which I love how they made a point of, oh, hey, look, he made a joke. Mm-hmm. And it's something that happens so infrequently that when it did happen, you're like, oh, okay. So now we're really getting an understanding for Roland as a character in this book. And while I think it's important, I just thought it was a fine book. I ended up, you know, giving this like a 3 out of 5, which I know we usually talk about ratings. And I have certainly liked the other books a lot more, but I think it's because you can tell this guy was on a mission and on a journey, and then it just comes to a stop in this. So he can tell this background. And I don't really enjoy it when they're like, hey, we're going to stop everything and give you a background on this one character. And instead, you know, I like it more when you find out about the character as things go along, and you don't really need to put a big pause on everything to get to know everything you need to know about a character, which it's a choice that King made. It can't be undone. He did it. It's fine. I just don't think this is the book that really made me want to be like, okay, where are they going next?
If this was the first book in a series, it definitely wouldn't be something that would draw you in. Like, it does literally nothing to further their journey to the Dark Tower. Yeah. But placed as it is, what is it, number 4 in the series?
Yes.
It serves its purpose. Like I said, it doesn't further their journey to the tower at all. It definitely does put a halt on everything. But this is like a really important insight into Roland, I think. And it's one that we definitely needed, but it could have been done in a different way.
Yeah. And the only downside to me doing this chronologically is the fact that book 4.5 comes last. So there's 5, 6, and 7 after this, back to back to back, like I mentioned earlier. And then you have the win through the keyhole years later that kind of fills in, I guess, some of the blanks between books 4 and 5. So I kind of want to just jump ahead and read that one, but then I know by the time I get to it, I probably won't remember enough of it to do the podcast. So I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place with the Dark Tower series at this very moment in time, because I'm halfway through. And as you and I know from reading things like the Harry Potter books and just some other series, sometimes you have books that are kind of a stall, I guess, in the story, and then you really get things going again later. So I don't want to say that happens with Harry Potter necessarily, because I feel like that was just so well paced throughout. But you and I have been covering those and we've done the first four books for Welcome to Geekdom, and I still have three more to reread. So I could be wrong. There could be a little lull in Harry Potter too, but I think with Wizard and Glass, there's just so much information thrown at you here to process it all. It probably will take me until book five to really understand what happened in this book.
Yeah, I think reading through the next book definitely helps a lot. It was just a very weird stylistic choice all around for the way that this book was framed, because you literally get very, very little present day action, and everything that takes place is all stuff that has already happened. It cannot be changed, and it just is.
Yeah, I do want to talk more about the ending though, because there is a very, very heavy Wizard of Oz presence at the end this book with those last 60 pages. And it was something that I wasn't expecting out of Stephen King, because it's very playful almost. I know that Wizard of Oz is sort of this story that isn't necessarily for children, but it's always felt like people have regarded Wizard of Oz as a children's thing, even though the story is much more mature than that, I think. Unless I'm totally misreading things I know about Wizard of Oz, but you get this moment where they all have these red shoes waiting for them, even Oi, and they're like, wait, yes, there's, you know, too many pairs of shoes. And then they're like, oh, because this is a four-legged animal, so there's an extra pair for him. So that was just some much needed comic relief at the end, I think, where you're kind of like, oh, okay, they're really going to make them click their heels together.
Yeah, it's very heavy-handed on the Wizard of Oz references there. If you say ruby slippers or red shoes or anything like that, people's minds are automatically going to go to Wizard of Oz. And it's very strange, because I feel like any other references that have come in this book have been a lot less heavy-handed.
Uh-huh.
They're just kind of slipped in there discreetly. And you're like, oh yeah, I know what he's talking about here, because it's making references back to Jake and Susanna and Eddie's world, which is kind of in line with our own. But nothing is quite so glaring as this very weird Wizard of Oz, just Emerald City-esque place that they've come to.
When I was reading the end of it, I was like, wow, this book tonally is just so wild, because you have this big triumphant thing at the beginning, and then you have this really doom and gloom flashback by the time you get through all of it. And then you have this sort of funny, surreal moment with the last part of the book where they return to the present day. And there are still some things where you're tense, because you don't know what's going to happen to these characters now, especially when they look into the glass and you have that whole chapter just on that. You're kind of like, okay, are they going to be able to get out of this? Are they going to come back? You know, what's going to happen to them? But before that, when you get that Wizard of Oz moment, you're kind of like, okay, this is a little over the top for the tone of the book. You're kind of like, is he trying to be funny, or does he just really like the Wizard of Oz?
I think it could be a little of both. Why does it have to be one or the other?
Fair. It just seems like a weird moment to put something funny in.
Yeah, it felt very out of place for them to be walking along this highway, and then all of a sudden we're placed in the Wizard of Oz. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense and felt very weird and was a little off-putting.
They even had the "we're not in Kansas anymore" line.
Yeah, and there just aren't really any other moments like this in the series so far, so it just felt very strange.
Especially given who Roland is as a character, you know, he was kind of the one that needed the most convincing that this was a thing they were going to do. But even Eddie was like, is this a joke? Is this actually going to work? Are we really all going to click our heels together and this gate is going to magically open?
Yeah. And when Eddie is questioning something at that point, you know, it's bad.
Yeah. And obviously with Jake being younger, I feel like this moment resonated more towards him, because he still sort of has this youthful innocence and playfulness about him, especially as Oi is following him around like a pet dog would. And it's still a little unclear what Oi really is, because he's described as so many different things. He's described as dog-like. He's described as something else by Eddie. And I was just like, what does this thing actually look like?
Yeah, I've tried picturing it in my mind, and like, I just keep coming back to like a dog with weird raccoon paws and like an anteater snout of some sort. I'm just like, none of this makes any sense.
He's called a Billy Bumbler, but I'm just kind of like, what is that? That does nothing for me. And looking at the picture that they have on the Dark Tower wiki, it's just, yeah, it's kind of like striped black and white, but it looks more like a cat than a dog, and with some raccoon mixed in. And you're just like, I don't even know, but we're just going to kind of pretend he's a pet dog for the ease of picturing what this character looks like when it's walking and following Jake around.
Oh, I didn't even realize there were pictures of this on the Dark Tower wiki, and I just brought it up, and this is not at all what I was picturing in my head.
Yeah, it's because they give you so many different descriptions. They're like, oh, he's dog-like. Oh, he's like this and like this. You're just like, I don't know. An animal with four legs, that's all that really matters at this point, I guess.
Yeah. A weird thing that just kind of follows them around and chimes in every once in a while because he thinks he knows what's happening. Kind of understands it.
Yeah, it's really weird how Oi can half-talk. Like, he'll say Oland instead of Roland.
Mm-hmm. I think that provides some, like, much-needed, not comic relief here and there, but a little bit of lightness.
Yeah, just some levity to a lot of the scenes, because you're like, oh, here's this random animal that can half-talk.
Yeah, like, they have a little pet that they're bringing with them, and he's great, and they love him.
Obviously, Oi is not a major factor in this book by any means. He's really just a follower and trying to sort of keep track of what is going on. But I did like the moment where, you know, they get the shoes on Oi and then they have to click his heels together because he wants to do it, but he can't. And I was like, okay, yeah. This feels like a very dog-like thing to do when you're trying to get a dog to learn a new trick or something, and it wants to, but it just can't quite get all the way there.
Yeah, it like doesn't quite get it yet. I did like that they included Oi in the shoes and like they needed to put the shoes on him. And it was like this moment of realization where like they had all put their shoes on and they tried clicking their heels together and it didn't work. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, we have Oi too. We have to put his shoes on.
It shows how much he's a part of the group.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not they really intended for him to be is another thing. But just because Oi follows Jake around no matter what and is willing to take all of these various risks to be able to follow Jake around, you're kind of like, okay, you know, he's earned his keep, basically. Even though he's not someone, because he's an animal who can contribute a ton, he's very dedicated to Jake, and I think that's sort of nice to see throughout all of this direness that Stephen King brings us.
Yeah, and he's very much as much a part of the quartet as the rest of them are. Like, when Jake is kidnapped and Roland has to go rescue him, Oi is right there with him to help.
Yeah. I didn't intend on talking about Oi this much, but I just thought with the ending there, you really get a sense for sort of the personality of Oi, because we don't see a lot of our main characters other than Roland in this book. So I feel like King just sort of had to give you these glimpses of each of them.
Yeah. Maybe we didn't mean to talk about Oi so much, but I like him, so I'm good with that.
Yeah, same here. So I think I am definitely looking forward to how book 5 continues things, because I was super excited when this book started and it picked up with the Blaine the Mono storyline. And we were like, okay, you know, they got out from under his quote unquote thumb and they were able to move on with their journey. But then they don't really move on with the journey. So then I was like, oh, okay. Very, very interesting choice here by Stephen King. And despite all of the detail that we are given in the flashback, I don't know if I have too much more to say about it. Was there anything in particular that stood out to you with the flashback, or just anything else about this book in general?
There is so much that happens, but not really. And King just, he very much loves this whole story within a story idea. And it's something that we've seen quite a few times throughout the series so far. And it, yeah, there really wasn't much forward momentum in this one.
which is okay, I guess. Like I said, I didn't hate the book. Maybe it sounded like I did from this podcast, but I think it explains a lot that needs to be explained about Roland. I wish we would have been able to get it in smaller chunks, I guess, is the main thing I would have preferred, because it's like, we're going to throw all this information at you at once. It's going to be a lot to process. You're going to get to know about Susan a lot. And, you know, she's this character who we're introduced to her, but we're not really sure why we're supposed to care about her at the beginning. And then you find out, okay, you know, she meets Roland, and then you get a little more invested in their relationship and then the tragic ending of it. And you really just get this sense like, okay, this is how things started for Roland, and not even necessarily started, but just on this Dark Tower journey, because we do get a lot about like Roland's childhood before this too, in the other books, when we're learning about his relationship with his father, you know, all the sort of tests he was taking while he was a kid, the trials and everything that he was going through to kind of become a gunslinger eventually, and everything with his brother, I think, or is Court not his brother? I don't know. There are so many characters in this. I'm having trouble keeping track of everything.
A lot of characters with a lot of very strange names, or a lot of very similar names, to the point where it's hard to remember who is who.
Yeah, putting a Susan and a Susanna in the same book together should not be allowed.
That's just mean. I think this whole flashback probably could have been cut a little bit shorter and told a little bit more succinctly and framed by more of like present day action. I think that would have helped kind of move it along a little bit.
Yeah. And because this book kind of kept them in place for a good chunk of it, I'm wondering if, you know, having 5, 6, and 7 back to back, he sort of moves the story along at a more brisk pace. And obviously that's going to be a lot of Dark Tower reading in one chunk for me, since he was like, oh crap, better finish these up in case anything happens to me. And as we now know, nothing has happened to him in quite some time. So he could have taken his time a little more with those. But I think because he knew that the story was going to be so long at the beginning, I kind of have this trust at this point that he's going to know how to move this along in the coming books.
Yeah. I'm not going to say too much because I've read the next book already. Okay. So I do know a little bit, but yeah, it does manage to continue moving along at a more reasonable pace from here on out.
Well, that certainly makes me more eager to get to the next book. I have quite a few in between, but I think what I'm going to do at the end of the Dark Tower series is reevaluate sort of my ratings and look at it as a whole, because I feel like sometimes I was just excited. I was like, oh, I hit the Dark Tower. Here's the gunslinger. I'm very excited about this. And then maybe by the time I get through all 8 of the books, I'll sort of have to temper my expectations for each one. And I don't know if I'll necessarily adjust ratings, but maybe I'll come back and do like a bonus episode on my thoughts overall on the high points, low points, things like that. Because reading just one book at a time, it's hard to factor in the whole story when you don't know the whole story yet.
Right. It definitely helps when you're able to get an actual like overview of the series as a whole versus each individual piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Becky, do you have anything else, or does that sort of wrap up your thoughts on this one?
That wraps it up for me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for continuing to come on to talk about the Dark Tower books. I know King isn't necessarily your favorite author, since horror isn't your jam, but this epic fantasy seems to be right up your alley, at least.
Yeah, this is definitely a little more my speed than, say, like It or Carrie would be, I think.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that, just knowing some of your book tastes.
Yeah, we'll talk more about some other stuff I've been reading lately, but yeah, definitely.
Awesome. And I look forward to having you back on for future Dark Tower episodes.
Yeah, same. Thanks.
All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.